Good evening and welcome, dear ones, each of you is a blessing for all of us as we come together in wonder and in shared intention for the fullness of our possibility in and as Christ. So we join in holy remembering that there is light divine, there are laws of the universes, and there is grace and mercy for each one of us. So we begin in the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, and God immanent, the Holy Living Trinity. Amen. Well, tonight's remembrance is about a very special person, very special to some of us personally, and to many throughout the world. And yet, most of us have never heard of this man, Joseph Boyle. Joseph was the abbot of St. Benedict's Monastery, and whose authority Thomas Keating was under. And though Father Thomas wrote 30 books and traveled the world, Joseph wrote no books and largely stayed at the monastery where he was abbot for a very long time, because he entered the monastery when he was 18. But if ever there was an individual in the conscious circle of humanity, it would be Joseph, a being of great light and love. His birthday is June 14th. He would have been 82. He died just 4 days prior to Thomas Keating. So I would like to again read to you an excerpt about him from an interview by a Belgian filmmaker who came to Snowmass and published a book, A World Without End, at the end of 2016. The book actually features Father Thomas and his works and writings, and the interviewers exchange with him. But there was a brief exchange with Joseph as well. This is what she has to say. "Yesterday, I saw Venus coming home. Abbot Joseph said this to me at the start of the interview. I don't often see this brightest of all planets because we go to bed before the stars come out. The reason is that we rise at 4 in the morning for our first silent meditation. But yesterday, as I was returning home from a visitation to Georgia, a spectacular Venus accompanied me on my way back. Moreover, as he came to Snowmass, he had awakened to nature and found God in it. And many of us who went to Snowmass were blessed by Joseph's presence. Each evening after Vespers, he would come out and point out all of the constellations in the sky." The interviewer also asked him, "How did it all happen? How has his life been transformed?" He replied in the most modest yet authentic way possible, "I try to be as selfless as I can be. It's all very simple, but that's how God is for me, and that's what I want to be, a place where God can dwell and his love can spread through me." On Joseph's memorial card, it read, "I know God's love for me, and I trust in his mercy." He emanated mercy and love for everyone. If you were introduced to Joseph, he always remembered your name, even if it was years later when he next saw you. So, Joseph, may your loving presence abide with us and bless us in the invisible worlds, and guiding us too in being a place where God can dwell. Amen. So now we prepare ourselves to gather this place of being where God surely does dwell, and to begin to see and to know and to love, to remember ourselves and one another. And we do this quietly, asking our heart to hear what it is for us to know and to be at this time, to risk. This matters for our very selves, for one another, and for the world in ways that we will never know. We place ourselves with intention and imminent trust and receptivity to the influences coming from the conscious circle of humanity. And we prepare to receive them with all the consciousness that we can gather, with back upright, heart opened, mind quiet, in directed attention, body relaxed, noticing perhaps and then releasing tension, constriction, resistance. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today, all our work, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that brought heaviness, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than. Everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy, all affirming, all denying. And we hold it as offering, reconciled as food for being. We lift it and ask that all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world. All worlds. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all anxieties and small fears of my heart. I open to the divine human life that is mine. I am here. I am, I wish, I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. So now we enter into our time of Lectio Divina. And we'll listen to the reading of our passage three times. Everyone who has been given much, so too much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, so too much more will be asked. The profundity of third line work with no attachment to an outcome is that it contains no other wish than for the work ideas to bear good fruit in others' lives. In so doing, coupled with her own personal work and work with others in the work, it bears fruit in her own life. Making payment on the spiritual and psychological dimension is another way of expressing what we love, what we value our love. Making payment is an aspect of our conscious labors, and we can do this in two directions: backward in gratitude and forward in generosity. Our valuation, acquisition, and application of work ideas is a way to pay it backwards with gratitude to our work sources, and thus feed these sources with our fresh energy and conscious attention, keeping the sources alive. We pay forward with our generosity, empowering the living ideas of the work to continue to manifest and radiate their gifts in our time by our selfless sharing, service, and participation. This is remembering others. This is holy remembering. Everyone who has been given much, so too much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, so too much more will be asked. The profundity of third line work with no attachment to an outcome is that it contains no other wish than for the work ideas to bear good fruit in others' lives. In so doing, coupled with our personal work and work with others in the work, it bears fruit in our own life. Making payment on the spiritual and psychological dimension is another way of expressing what we value or love. Making payment is an aspect of our conscious labors, and we can do this in two directions: backward in gratitude and forward in generosity. Our valuation, acquisition, and application of work ideas is a way to pay it backwards with gratitude to our work sources, and thus feed these sources with our fresh energy and conscious attention, keeping the sources alive. We can pay forward with our generosity, empowering the living ideas of the work to continue to manifest and radiate their gifts in our time by our selfless sharing, service, and participation. This is remembering others. This is holy remembering. Everyone who has been given much, so too much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, so too much more will be asked. The profundity of third line work with no attachment to an outcome is that it contains no other wish than for the work ideas to bear good fruit in others' lives. In so doing, coupled with our personal work and work with others in the work, it bears fruit in our own life. Making payment on the spiritual and psychological dimension is another way of expressing what we value or love. Making payment is an aspect of our conscious labors, and we can do this in two directions: backward in gratitude and forward in generosity. Our valuation, acquisition, and application of work ideas is a way to pay it backwards with gratitude to our work sources, and thus feed these sources with our fresh energy and conscious attention, keeping the sources alive. We can pay forward with our generosity, empowering the living ideas of the work to continue to manifest and radiate their gifts in our time by our selfless sharing, service, and participation. This is remembering others. This is holy remembering. And so it is. So I invite you to step forth and participate and share. Jackie, good evening.
Good evening, Marianne. How are you tonight?
Very good. Thank you.
I heard reciprocal maintenance from the entire beautiful passage, that everyone who has been given much, which all of us are here, so too much will be demanded. And what a sweet demand this is. And in a way, it seems that the idea that little bitty insignificant me can be in reciprocal maintenance with God, it just seems almost inappropriate, but it is actually true under the fourth and the fifth Oblogonian strivings.
Yes.
And I heard both of those strivings in this passage tonight. And the manifestation is of gratitude. I have such gratitude for what I have been given. When I gave so very little, particularly for years and years in this work. And I am grateful that I am still here and that I am still able to give back in some tiny little bitty way. And to be in company with saints like you, Marianne. I mean, what a blessing this is, truly, honestly. To pay as quickly as possible for our arising, to free us, to share in our common Father's suffering. How could there be anything that we ever do on this earth more fruitful and wonderful than that?
I can't think of anything. Thank you, Jackie. Thank you. Elizabeth, please.
Her husband.
Okay. Yeah, the part about making payment spiritually, it reminded me of the writings of one of the Inklings, Charles Williams. And he wrote a lot about what he called the practice of substituted love. Mm-hmm. And in Christianity, there's the concept of substitutionary atonement, of Christ's work on the cross. And unfortunately, it's often portrayed in a mechanistic and punitive way that is rightfully repulsive, I believe. But I also think there is a sense of it that is very true and beautiful, and that Williams described that very well, and that the true part of it about the making payment is that we can literally carry one another's burdens, and we can place ourselves in one another's stead. And C.S. Lewis was a friend of Charles Williams, and when his wife Joy had cancer, he practiced Williams' art of substituted love and said, you know, I want to take on the pain of my wife, like physically. And it actually worked. He went back in the house and she wasn't in pain anymore. And he literally felt pain in his own body. So just thinking about those kind of acts of substituted love and carrying one another's burdens and making payment, I think puts a really beautiful spin on the act of substitution.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you very much. Melba, please.
Thank you, Marianne. That third paragraph felt like I wrote it. It felt like I wrote it, and I was talking specifically to the CCH community. When I share and get excited, it's because I want to make a payment, because I've benefited so much from everything I've learned. And what I love and what I value. So that's all I wanted to say. And I want to say that I benefited so much that it feels like my enthusiasm, my excitement is making payment.
Indeed it is. Thank you, Melba, for your light. Thank you. Steve Utz, good evening, sir.
Good evening. yeah, I think this is the apotheosis of the work. It's where it touches Christianity. The essence of Christianity is that broader view on things. And I think the older we get, we kind of we succumb to the undertow of seeing things more broadly and seeing our context in a broader light, and what we, and this debt, this idea of duty, Kesgen duty, to leave something behind, and also an appreciation for lives past, which is a wonderful way we've weaved this genealogy into it. And I just marvel at these silent witnesses from the past. All their strivings are done. Their lives are complete. They're told in these scraps of documents, obituaries and birth records, et cetera. But you can paint in a picture of somebody who tried to hit it the best they could. And, you know, back then they were good Presbyterians, and they were good stalwart Democrats or whatever they were, and it was always in their obituary memorializing them. But it's I think seeing this way and that we stand between the past and the future, and we play our part. So thank you.
Amen. May it be so, Steve. May it be so. Pamela, good evening.
Hi. I heard the phrase radiate their gifts, which seemed to describe the image and also the part in the email that brought up the fourth line of the work, which is that after some time, gifts are just radiated. The gift of being changes everything. As Father Thomas says, just by walking down the street or drinking a cup of coffee, that is a service to the world, which is completely unselfconscious, unaware. It's just by being who we are. So I love that phrase, and I love the image, radiate their gifts, because it is all gift.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you,
Pamela. So Kay, we'll close this particular part of our evening with you. Thank you.
Hi, Marianne, everybody else. I just went to the forgiveness and welcoming retreat. And the phrases that caught my attention in the Lectio tonight were backward in gratitude and forward in generosity. And there were many things at the retreat that exemplified this, but the thing that really stands out in my mind are the three women that did our meals. They stood before us three times a day, and they embodied work principles in their little W work of cooking. They presented these gracious, beautiful, delicious meals. And at every meal, they had a reading or a prayer. We even did some chanting before the meals. Mm. And it was the one time, or three times during the day, when we all held hands. We touched each other. And grand silence, you don't do that. And so just the example of those ladies just really is a picture to me of backward in gratitude and forward in generosity.
Absolutely it is. Thank you, Kay. Thank you for highlighting that. One of the real joys and blessings of a retreat is to be on the receiving end of that graciousness.
Yes.
So thank you everyone who shared and everyone who listened deeply and took in and whose heart has been expanded by what we've heard and seen and witnessed with one another. So now it is my joy to introduce someone who does personify the third line of work, and that is Karen Raglan, who will accompany us in our journey deeper into remembering others. So good evening and welcome, Karen. You need to unmute yourself too.
I should be sharing, am I? Can you see my screen? Oh, you're on mute, so I wasn't hearing you.
Yes, I see you.
Okay. Do you see my share?
No.
No, okay, try again. We good now?
Yes.
All right, good. Thank you. So tonight, yes, we cover third line work. And before we go there, let's reflect on our homework, the second line work that Tracy shared with us. And actually, it's really been two with Mimi's share as well with external considering. All of that's about second line. So I thought I'd cover real quick what the homework said, Identify the second line work relationships and opportunities you have in your life. Perhaps make an effort to express gratitude to those that you do know and are aware of. And ponder the four practical steps listed above in the email, which aspect calls to you the most. Now, I'm going to put out a challenge, and that is for all of those who have shared in the last, say, 4 to 6 weeks, if you have something big, like a buffer has come down, or there's been some big transformation and useless suffering and things like that, we want to hear from you. But I'm making space for others to share tonight, the gift of sharing and the third line work that is sharing. So we want to hear from you. It was real big. And if not, then I'll hold the space open for others who haven't shared in a while.
And Karen, yeah. You will need to take down your screen so we can see others too.
How is that what I'm doing wrong? It seems like I don't know what I'm doing. And I do this all day long. Lord have mercy. Here we go. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Karen.
There we go.
Well, I shared this with my journey group, but I find that work relationships are different than any other kind of relationships in such a good way. And my example was that if I'm having difficulty with someone in my life, like my husband or coworker or whatever, if I go to a friend, they tend to sing my song with me and just reinforce me and tell me how right I am, which is not necessarily a good thing. So I want to go to a work friend, whether it's work partner or someone in the journey group, and hear the truth. I want to hear how my mechanicality is contributing to the issues. And I just have found over the years that that is such a remarkable gift to help me see reality. So I'm just so grateful to all of you people in the work who have helped me along the way so often. Thanks.
Thank you, Pam. Right on. Just so you know, I'm prepared to wait at least 5 minutes. So relax. Gather your thoughts. Jack or Jackie or both.
This as best I can. So for the third line, first, second, and third line of work, what I took on last week was the teaching to remember at all times your own mortality and the mortality of everyone you come into contact with. Kind of sounds a bit morbid, but at the same time, it's so revealing and releasing. So yesterday, driving to work, I drove upon a motorcycle accident about 2 minutes before it happened and drove by and saw the crumpled dead body of the motorcyclist. And I was able to reflect on all my work as a law enforcement officer. Fatal accidents, stuff that too much information, I guess. The loss of my granddaughter, the loss of Tom. And I recognized and I felt it, and I've been feeling it for 2 days now, that it's not morbid. It's revealing, and it's empowering to recognize that this isn't about me at all. This is about everything and everyone. And maybe none of this makes any sense, but it feels like it does. And it feels like it's the three lines of work. And in a way that I can reconcile many, many years of not being conscious and bringing consciousness into it all. And looking at your mortality, but recognizing that it's good to see you.
I believe that soul was still right there with its body, and that it was such a gift.
I felt it.
Such a gift for you to be attracted to be there in the presence of that soul.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us tonight, Jack.
Love you, girl.
Yeah. Elizabeth. Hi.
Hey.
The line a couple of weeks ago in the Lectio Divina reading stood out to me that we are all equally beginners. And I've been reflecting on that and how important that is for me to internalize. Since I seem to have a knee-jerk reaction of like trying to figure out where I am on any given hierarchy at any given moment. And I've been realizing over the past year that every single person on the planet is just figuring things out as they go along. and once you really understand that, you start to just notice it, you know, that everyone, whether they're, you know, some famous person that seems to have it all together, or whether they're homeless on the street, like everyone has had a certain set of experiences and choices and that has brought them where they are. And we will continue to have more experiences and more choices that can lead us somewhere radically different, for better or for worse. And we're all in that present moment of, you know, turning heavenward or into our internal hell. At any moment, we all have that same choice point, and we're all beginners. So I've been reflecting on that.
Thank you. If we could only remember that you know, God wants us to come as little children. He doesn't want us to come as scholars from the university. Yeah. Catherine, hi.
Hi there, everybody. I was reflecting on the four practical steps. I've always really gravitated toward the homework side when it's practical. That's just my personality. Anyhow, the one that I chose to look at more frequently in my observations is, if I understood, I wouldn't disagree. And I could see how many times that in a disagreement with another person, you know, I was so sure that my opinion was the right one and that I needed to convince the other person to be thinking differently. And that, you know, a couple of times, one in particular this week, it was a real shock to me to listen closely to somebody share something that was not my thoughts at all. And so I find that if I externally consider the other person and where they're coming from, then I have a better chance of that understanding. But many times I can see that I get to the stage of not expressing negative emotion, but in my head, I'm still saying, you know, I know this is the really way it should be, this other way that I'm thinking, you know? And so I think part of it is accepting and circumstances, and particularly circumstances for another person that's true for them and may not be true for me. And I don't need to make anybody else just like me and think like me. And so that part about if I understood, I wouldn't disagree. So I'm working really hard at not disagreeing with a lot of things that come up. But understanding for me is that it's somebody else's truth for them. And that, you know, it may not be to my liking, but I know it's true for that other person. So that's what I looked at this week.
Thank you, Catherine. The thing that helps me, and I think I shared this in my second line in my journey group, is that it doesn't say that we agree. It says we just don't disagree. That's helped me a lot because I still don't agree, but I wouldn't disagree either. Thank you. Karen.
Okay. Thank you, Karen. Can I be heard?
You can.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I will extend my experiences with sharing about choosing a place for me to retire to. And I've talked about this before. So I have sold my house, yay. And the first of this week, it looked like it was all going to fall apart. She wanted more in allowances from me that I frankly just could not afford. So I was very glad that I knew where I could go and where I definitely could not go. And I could see her point of view. If I were in her shoes, I may have done the very same thing. However, I've been planning on this, you know, basically all my life. I've been adding into the equity of my home for the final sale that I will now live on for the rest of my life. That was a pretty big deal. But I kept in mind, I prayed, I asked for help, and I was just repeating over and over again in my head that God will make things right, whatever that looks like. And I did accept. If it looks like that she wants more money, well, fine. But I can't give it to her. It is not mine to give. And it was really quite shocking. But I have learned through this wonderful work to pray for what I need, ask for what I need, be grateful for what I have, and to know that God puts it together in a way that's absolutely the best that it could be, you know, with all my trial, all my efforts, and I know what that feels like. That's very tiny. So I'm grateful that my house is sold. I can agree with people. And I think I go around just feeling in general more generous and happy and grateful. And I like that feeling. It tastes good.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Okay, Cammy, we'll do one more and then get into the lesson.
Oh, thank you, Karen. I teach yoga and I'm a mind body skills teacher, and invite people to make connections a lot with the body and to notice stress warning signals. But for some reason, how the homework was laid out, I had never quite made the connection for myself between the habituated body postures that I have that influence my external considering. And I think that this was most obvious just with my own husband. We've been married now 32 years, and I find that I can assume a critical posture, furrowed brow, kind of in more intense eyes, almost just a facial expression of a readiness to disagree. Even before he opens his mouth, the poor guy. I mean, it just really became humorous thinking about how I just anticipated taking a divergent stance. And so that really piqued my curiosity. And I started to notice how I needed to back up before the external considering to assume a body posture of, if I want to be externally considering, I want to be generous and kind. And so that feels differently in the body. There's an ease through the heart and a softness through the shoulders and a gentle smile on the face and eyes easy in the sockets and a brow that is soft. My work partner uses the word wonder. And I've been playing with that a little bit instead of thinking, what are they trying to say? And just ready to kind of have a counter opinion. So just the impact and the relationship with the body and the mechanical nature of the body too was a big lesson for me this past week.
Great. Thank you, Cammy. Well, okay, let me get back to my share here and we'll get into the lesson. And I, like Catherine, have the same personality type. So this lesson is rather informational and practical. So let's move along here. I heard a lot of you speak of third line work this evening in even the Lexio sharing, being about service and serving others. And whenever I thought of third line work, I mean, I had to do some other research on it, and I did that some number of years ago. But before that, I just really relied on Dr. Nichols' commentaries, and he doesn't say a whole lot about third line of work. He calls it work for the sake of the work, and when he refers to it, it's even somewhat transitional, like as of now or at this point or for now, whenever he refers to it. So I went looking for other information, and The Fourth Way by P.D. Ouspensky calls third line work for the sake of the organization or the school. And then J.G. Bennett, in his book, The Sevenfold Work, calls the third line work conscious labors and intentional suffering, or duty and service. So I thought I'd go through and give some quotes from these books with regards to those lines of work. They're all the third line work, but they're different aspects of the third line. So let's just go straight to it here. With Dr. Nichols, work for the sake of the work. And I'm going to read these quotes and maybe offer a little bit of commentary with it. But the quotes are important to me in terms of capturing the essence of it rather than me just adding some commentary to it, which I might afterwards, but the quotes are important to hear it in their words. So the third line of work is for us at present, and here he is, for us at present, as if there's going to be something else later, to help the work. in general and try to see what is required of us and not talk wrongly or harm the work. Right valuation and right attitude to the work belong to the third line, but they enter into everything, because unless one has valuation and right attitude, one will work neither on oneself nor with others, nor for the work. As was said already, all three lines of work are necessary. A man working by himself and only for himself cannot get anywhere. To begin with, he has not the force to do so. Now, in this work, as it was once taught, we learned that before we can have something, we must earn the cash to pay for it. In this work, we pay beforehand. How? By working on the three lines of work. Work on yourself, work in connection with others, and work for the work itself. What is work on yourself? It is, in my case, work to make Dr. Nickel passive. What is work with others? It is exactly the magic power of external considering, which we've been covering in the last 2 weeks. What is work for the work itself? It is to see, to understand what we are trying to do, what direction is being given, what will help the work itself. And for me, that didn't really tell me anything I could work with, which is why I went looking. So now let's talk about work for the sake of the school or organization or group. Janine de Salzman in our current community reading has a few lines in there with regards to this. In becoming conscious of ourselves as a group, which is what we are, as a group, we experience the truth of our work. If the group does not become conscious of itself as a group, it cannot know its place and obligations in the work. It cannot serve, cannot play its role in the work. And what comes to mind here is, for instance, the Oblates. We put on the Vespers services at Lent and Advent. That is our work for the sake of the work, as a group doing the work. When we come together, I must be prepared to speak. I must constantly reflect on my work and not come in a passive state. If I come without being prepared, it has not much sense. If I have no definite aim, we have nothing to speak about. How can we have an exchange? And in that, you can kind of see second line and third line all being kind of blended together. And I'm going to talk about that towards the end of this deck, where I kind of tease apart all the different lines based on an example that I'm giving. And here, like Jackie mentioned, the strivings, the Obligonian strivings, this refers to the fifth one, the striving always to assist, assist the most rapid perfecting of other beings. It's beautiful. Now, work for the sake of the school, organization, or group, this is where the real meat is with P.D. Ouspensky's book, The Fourth Way. The third line is work for the school, for the organization. The last line takes on different aspects for different people. One must think about what is useful, what is necessary for the school, what the school needs. So the third line concerns the whole idea of school and all the present and the future of the work. If a man does not think about this and does not understand it, then the first two lines will not produce their full effect. Here again, all three are needed. This is how school work is arranged, and this is why three lines are necessary. One can get additional shocks and the full benefit of the work only if one works on three lines. And what comes to mind here is, like if you're working in one center or two centers, an intellectual center or emotional center, and you're not getting anywhere or you feel stuck, you can give yourself a shock by changing centers, getting up and moving around, getting into moving center. It's the same thing here. If your first line work has plateaued, it has stuck in some way, you can change what line of work you're doing and get additional shocks and get additional force and help to work through whatever it is that you're wanting to work through. So everyone who wants to go on must realize that this work, its existence, and its welfare is his own business or hers, that they must think about it and must try to understand its requirements, must regard it as their personal concern that the work should go on, and not to leave all this to other people. The most important thing is to make it one's own concern, to think of it as one's own work. And a few more from Ospensky. And this one is in the email too, but I'm going to read through it because it's just exquisite. Payment is the most important principle in the work, and it must be understood. Without payment, you cannot get anything. But as a rule, we want to get something for nothing, and that is why we have nothing. If we really, if we really decided to go for this kind of knowledge, or even for a quite small thing, and we went for it regardless of everything else, we would get it. The first payment is, of course, taking the trouble to study and understand the things you hear. Payment, in the true sense of the word, must be useful, not only to you, but to someone else, and to the school. And that's sharing and exchange. And I love this part. You have received these ideas and came here because certain people have worked before you and have put their energy and time into it. Now you must learn to share the responsibility. You cannot continue getting the ideas without sharing the responsibility. This is quite natural. And I love the way Marianne starts every one of our Thursday evening sessions or educational sessions with a reflection on our lineage, our educational lineage. It's such a gift to hear that every single time. I never tire of it. In fact, sometimes it's the gift that I get most out of the evening. And here, this refers to the Oblogonian striving, number 4, the striving from the beginning of their existence to pay for their arising and their individuality, to be free to lighten as much as possible the sorrow of our common father. So Jackie, yes, both Oblogonian strivings are all embedded in this. Now, another big sharing from J.G. Bennett in his book, The Sevenfold Work. He refers to the third line of work as service and conscious labors and intentional suffering. The third line of work requires sacrifice, and an important aspect of it is sacrifice on behalf of the needs of the future. We have to work now in order that something is made possible for people in the future who will know nothing of us and may never give the work of earlier generations a single thought. You know, it makes me wonder, did J.G. Bennett think that we'd be talking about him this evening and sharing his ideas in our class? Maybe, because he had written a book, but I don't know. It must be fairly obvious that the third line of work must involve suffering. This is especially connected with the feeling nature, for our feelings have to be sacrificed if we are to fulfill our obligations. We have to do what we dislike, disregard our inclinations, and allow demands from outside to command us. As Gurdjieff suggested, if we set ourselves to be of service to others, we inevitably incur suffering in ourselves. Hence the term intentional suffering. We do not seek to suffer, but this comes when we put ourselves under an obligation that makes sacrifice unavoidable. And for Gurdjieff, intentional suffering was the key to work, and we should take this third line of work very seriously. Without undertaking responsibilities, hardly anything is possible for us. And that, you know, if you think about it, the idea of good householder it kind of falls in alignment with this as well. Dr. Nickel didn't want a tramp or a lunatic coming into the work. He wanted a good householder, somebody that is aware of responsibilities and can take responsibility. Okay, one more from Mr. Bennett. When there is work for the sake of others, service, we can become empty of self. This is kenosis, which can only come through obeying an affirmation that comes from beyond us. There must be a true giving of oneself, not an action that produces a feeling of sacrifice, which in reality indulges our sense of self. So again, we could be saying, well, why is all of this important? What difference does it make? I'm working. Well, the third line of the work, if you do this for the sake of others, then we can become empty of self. And if we aren't empty of self, we'll know that. We'll notice that they didn't say thank you or whatever it is that might be going on for the personality. And that'll be our gauge to know that we've got more work to do. So all three lines are important. And it's important to understand their distinctions as well. Okay, what Gurdjieff calls conscious labor and intentional suffering, or being park dog duty. And this is for those of you that have just studied Beelzebub's Tales, or maybe y'all are still studying it. But this is that language from that book. So what Gurdjieff calls conscious labor and intentional suffering, or being park dog duty, is understood by him as working for the good of others, and particularly for the good of posterity. Through conscious labor and intentional suffering, we can be liberated from the consequences of the organ kunda buffer. Again, language from the book. This is the means that has been foreordained by our Creator for the conscious perfecting of beings. And finally, from Mr. Bennett. In the teaching of Shripa Puri Baba, this work is described under the heading of duty. It is there to be done, and one gets oneself to do it. We have duties to our bodies, our families, our profession, and so on. All these must be fulfilled. We do have to take into account the work on ourselves we have to do in order to get ourselves free of attachment to self-interest and our private concerns. There is a wrenching of oneself away from holding on to possession of one's own time, privacy, freedom of movement, and so on. Okay, so that should give you some idea of the three aspects that I showed at the beginning. Now, practical application, and this is where in practical application, you're really referring to making payment. Like, how do these, where in here can I do something that is part of working for the sake of the work or working for the sake of the school? So let's just go through those. And Tracy last week did a really great job of opening up the chat, and people just loaded it up with service opportunities. Now that's where they did second line work with others, but the service itself, working for others, that is third line work. So let's talk through some of these possibilities. Working for the sake of the work. Well, learn the language. Work on the side of knowledge and preciseness in thinking of work ideas. Now that's not being rigid. What that is, a good example is a recent one, conscious suffering and intentional suffering. In life, that sounds like they're both about the same thing or they're both related. But if you look at the work idea of conscious suffering and intentional suffering, they're very different. In fact, they're different lines of work. Conscious suffering is transformed, unavoidable, and useless suffering. Intentional suffering is duty and service. Conscious suffering is first line work. Conscious labors and intentional suffering or service is third line work. So you can see they're two different lines of work. They're both important, they're both valuable. And in life, saying conscious and intentional is probably about the same thing. But in the work, if you want to know that you're kind of stuck in the first line, then that gives you some idea of what the third line is, and or that you could use the third line to get unstuck. And then, well, then reflect, what is third line? Well, it's service. Well, then go out and serve somebody else instead of just being caught in your head and your emotions about something. Get up and go take care of some animals down at the animal shelter, or go to the church and cook Wednesday lunch when we're having lunch. Be a fool for the work. I want to read this to you. So Dr. Young, Carl Jung, Dr. Nickel used to be his student and worked with him. And he left working with Dr. Young to go study with Ostinsky and Gurdjieff. So this is what Dr. Young says about the fool. The fool is the precursor to the savior. And this is the basic idea of the fool archetype. A character who is unafraid to aim high, to try new things, and to face the unknown. Jung describes the fool as being a potential future, meaning that through various attempts and failures, the fool gains experience. Be a fool for the work. You're in a safe place. Composure is overrated. Just go for it. And study multiple sources. So that's basically what I just shared with you, all those different sources. And if you know, something looks thin and there's not much in the glossary to refer to, go find another source. Or talk to somebody in your second line. I keep referring to the second line. Your study group, and see if they have a source or if they know of something where you can go study it. And here, these are the most important. What is your attitude towards the work? Is it a necessary evil because it's part of the school and you really prefer the more lighthearted mystical dimension? What is your attitude towards the work? Is there something in the work that, like the cosmology, that you'd rather not spend your time on? You'd want to know that. What is your attitude? And then again, what is your valuation? When you come to the work, when you start the work octave and you sound the do, that's where your valuation shows up. And if you have low valuation, your octave is not going to go very far. It'll probably be a do, re, mi, do, re, mi. Are there any questions about that? Or comments even, like anybody else have one to offer in there? Please offer it up. Yeah, Jackie, go for it. You're still on mute. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. As you were going through this, and it was a beautiful presentation, Karen, thank you very much. I kept thinking of the Gurdjieff movements because I don't know anything else in my own life that involves all three lines of the work at one time, but also all three centers, if we're intentional and conscious in the moment. And we have recently had an end of this particular last session of movements with a demonstration, which we tend to do at the end of these semesters, because different eyes come up for us in demonstrations and when we are actually practicing. And the entire package encompasses all aspects of the work, as far as I can tell. Do what we dislike. I mean, we practice and practice and practice. We show up exhausted and are disappointed in ourselves. All these eyes are always there going, you're too tired, go home, don't do this. You struggle against that, you show up. You gain force and you realize, oh my God, I could have missed this and this opportunity to work with my friends together in one room with this incredible energy and along with instructors who have sacrificed a lot of time and effort to bring this to us, but they couldn't be there if we weren't there participating at the same time. The complete package. And I just don't personally know anything like that other than the movements. So I know I frequently give this pitch, but It's just life-giving.
Oh, Jackie, I'm so glad you brought that up. In fact, probably before I hand off this deck, I'm going to add movements to this one. And it speaks to the one I said earlier about being a fool for the work. Composure is overrated. Just go. Just start.
Yeah.
Thank you. Tamara, hi.
So I just wanted to say, over the years, I've had difficulties with certain things like hydrogens and cosmology and, going over all these different things on a Thursday night. I remember I would just kind of thought, okay, I can't figure this out. But I just remember always hearing the saying in my head is jump for the rope, you know? And it's like, I'm a 7 on the Enneagram. And so I love, exciting new things and I love trying on new things. So, but anyways, I feel like over the years, it's like even the scary things have become fascinating to me, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I just love that about the work. It's like, you may not be able to figure out in the beginning, but it's okay. Jump for the rope and, just do what's comfortable for you right now. I remember in the beginning, whenever I heard, if you understood, you wouldn't disagree. And that was a hard one for me, but now I totally get it. It's like, if I'm in their shoes going through their circumstances, mm-hmm. I would totally understand why they have that, just like they probably would, feel the same way about me, So it's just a great practice. Every tool that I have that I've gotten from the work has been so wonderful. And yeah, I want to try to do as much as I can to, help with the work is in any ways I can, because it's been a great value to me and my family. And yeah, so thank you.
Oh, that's perfect, Tamara. And I think it was Cammy that brought up wonder. It sounds like you've got a disposition now of, I wonder what that means and how I can apply it. And, when you've got a disposition like that, eventually something will come in and inform. Yeah, thank you. Catherine, hi. Oh, you had your hand up. Nope, not so much. Okay. All right. Let's talk about work for the sake of the school, organization, or group. So, basically show up, right? Wait, am I sharing? My green line outlining it has disappeared.
Yes, you're sharing.
Okay, good. Okay, work for the sake of the school, organization, group. Basically show up. Come to class, come to church, whether it's on Zoom or whatever. Come under authority of the guidelines. Offer to lead the group prayer or even facilitate the group. Serve at the church. There's so many possibilities. We saw that last week with Tracy's chat. It was amazing. And everybody was eager to throw it out there. There was no taking 5 minutes for anybody to get it going. They were out there right away. Remote folks can serve the school Zoom, be facilitators. In-person journey group participants can get to group early and set up chairs, close up. And this is a little quote also from his book. In this school, you get certain knowledge, but what do you give in exchange? In what way do you help the school? Are there any comments about this, about working for the sake of the school or the organization? Or, anything you want to offer that I haven't put here? Yeah. Okay. And then conscious labor and intentional suffering or service. Now this is a little bit different than service, but I mean, just service that in the way that I normally think of. Tamara, did you have something additional? Go ahead. Kathy, I think she wanted, no?
Yes. Yeah, I tried to unmute it. Sorry, it didn't work, but can you hear me? Yeah. So I just wanted to say something about SEVA. I mean, that is, to me, has been like the cornerstone of service, as far as like just being around, you know, beloveds at the church and, you know, helping each other. And anyways, I love Seva. So I just want to put a little, yeah. So.
Well, I actually, that's one of my examples that's coming up next.
Okay, thanks, Karen. And by the way, you were the one who helped me my first time in Seva. So okay. Thank you.
We do this for each other, right? Second line. Okay. Back to conscious labor and intentional suffering from J.G. Bennett, the Sevenfold Work. A very good beginning for the practice of the third line is in sharing, excuse me, what we know with others. We have acquired something from this work, and we are under the obligation to give what we can to others, to tell them what we know, show them methods and share experiences, even expose something of our inner life. And this is, I think, especially true of our journey groups, exposing something of our inner life or our inner emptiness to people. And the example is share in group and Thursday night, especially using work language and work ideas. Okay, ready for some examples. Well, so this is the, you know, examples of third line. What I did, because sometimes it's hard to tease apart all the different lines based on whatever it is we're doing. So I'm going to use Seva as an example. And you can see here, they don't always, you don't like do 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. You do them out of order. So the first thing with Seva, you do third line. You sign up to be on a Seva team. Conscious labors and intentional suffering have you up at 5 a.m. to cook eggs and arrive by 7 a.m. You know, you're coming under those obligations once you've signed up. Then first line is you bring eggs for brunch. And during Lexio, you get identified with the oven having been set too hot for warming. And you're worried that your eggs are getting dried out or burned. The recommendation is to self-observe non-critically, non-identify and self-remember. And if you're in centering prayer, return ever so gently to your sacred word. And you know, this is me, right? Like these are my experiences. So here, we all get given our little jobs, right? So for second line, the other sweeper is engaged in conversation in the fellowship hall while I sweep. Self-observe personality's internal considering or the making of that account. Work to externally consider. What difficulties might they be going through? Observe yourself through their eyes. So that's also like, I think it was Cammie. You go into the other person and through their eyes, looking back at you. And I love Mimi's exercise for that. That was so practical and useful. So observe the energy that you're shooting their way, the expression and the tone you are directing at them. That's all three lines with regards to Seva. I'm going to go into the next example and then we can open it up for questions. Journey group. Okay. You sign up to participate in a journey group. That's second line. You want to work with others in the work. Self-observe personality's internal considering or making accounts against those who linger in story. Again, this is me. Work to externally consider. What difficulties might they be going through? Find the same I in yourself that lingers in story. Know that if you can't find it, there's a buffer that needs to come down. And by buffer, I'm talking about the work idea buffer, which is a mechanism that the personality uses to hide contradictions from itself. So know that if you can't find it, there's a buffer that needs to come down. Thank them internally for helping you to see one side of the contradiction more clearly. You owe them everything. They owe you nothing. That's a hard one too. Like, I wouldn't disagree. And then the first line in Journey Group. Observe the eyes with the tendency to call in sick or have something come up. What eye doesn't want to work? Name it. Change centers. Get up and get to group or email that you won't be attending. That's first line. And now here comes the third line. And I've mentioned these earlier in some of the other, in one of the other slides. Work for the sake of the organization, or excuse me, organization or group. And that's the facilitation of these. In person, you can come early and set up chairs, take them down, lock up at the end. And for remote, you can offer to facilitate, lead the prayer, bring a related, meaningful be influence, reading to nourish the group with food of impressions, pray out. Those are just some of the examples. But you can see how all three lines are at work here. And they all matter and they are all needed. That's the end of my slides. So, does anybody else have any questions or comments or anything else they'd like me to like also make sure is captured, like I'm going to with Jackie and the movements? Hey, Virginia. Hi.
Karen, what you just said really impact, and I've already forgotten it. We all matter, and what was the second part of that?
Oh, I don't remember, but they all matter. Like every line of the work matters. It's all integrated. Like,
they all matter, and we all matter.
Right.
Sometimes when you cross that little metanoia, that my personality type says my presence doesn't matter. That's one of the lines in it. So it almost makes me want to cry to realize that we all matter for each other, for the future, for the past, for the work itself.
That's right. That's beautiful, Virginia. And you know, third line can help you feel a part of something bigger than yourself. The group, the organization. Yeah. Third line is beautiful in that way. Thank you. Martin, hi.
Hi, Karen. Thank you for bringing all those definitions of third line from all the different you know, our teachers. The one that sticks with me is more Bennett, where he opens it up to work for the sake of others. And to me, that brings in sort of the artistic impressions that people can put on the world, where we're able to bring those in and perhaps get the influence from those. For instance, the images for Lexio. One that comes to mind is something like a novel like The Wonderful Wizard of Oz by Frank Baum. There's so many work concepts in there, and that great triumph from just discovering yourself. But even at CCH, our music team, a lot of those chants you hear and some of the special music we used to do was written by our CCH people. And you can imagine the first line of work, the struggle to get that down. But the third line is just such a gift for everyone. And it always will be. It's just been written down and archived. We will have it forever. So I don't know. It's something to appreciate that maybe you can just sort of skip right by.
That's right.
And not appreciate that. But anyway, thank you.
Yeah, it might be interesting to take any of the service areas that you're involved in and try and tease apart the three different lines in it, like I did with my two here. Yeah. Well, I think we are done for the evening. Marianne, it's back to you. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Well, thank you, Karen, for that enlivening, informative session for all of us. I feel very blessed by your presence and everyone who shared as well. So we have time. We'll close with just a little word from Rodney Collin. Whatever is strongest affects whatever is weakest. A crowd could be on the verge of panic, and one strong person, by projecting confidence, can stop it. In a group of people who are trying to work, one person can raise the whole level. We can never make the excuse that there are some in the group that keep the whole on a low level, because one person can change the rest. Just one person. Suppose you come into a room and four people are quarreling. You go to one of them and say hello. You say it in such a way that changes the mood. Then you go to the next and the next with all four. And everything is different. And so it is. So we now close our time by joining together and praying aloud, wherever we are, the prayer of God's love. That God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.